Welcome to the Manx Theatre Podcast.
Come on to the theatre.
Hello, and welcome back to episode 71 of the Manx Theatre Podcast with me, Neil Callan. Thank you to everyone who's listened to our previous episodes. If you're brand new to the podcast, welcome along and thanks for joining us. In this podcast, we like to try and keep you up to date with what's going on in theatre in the Isle of Man, chatting to the cast and creatives of upcoming shows to find out a little bit more about the shows and the people behind them.
Coming up on this week's podcast,
I caught up with Charlie Williams and some of the cast members and assistant director Megan Hills ahead of Parados Theatre Company's production of the brand new play In Their Blood, written by Ori Wilson, which opens at the King's Court Theatre this Thursday, the 14th of August. You can still listen to all of our previous episodes through all the usual podcast outlets and at manxradio.com/podcasts. If you're enjoying the podcasts, whilst you're there, make sure to give us a like and a 5-star review and click subscribe or follow or whatever it is you need to do to make sure you never miss an episode. Giving the podcast a review also helps it make it more available for other listeners to find. Now, in the last episode, I announced the cast for the DCU's February 2026 production of Guys and Dolls. But at that time, the role of Miss Adelaide was still to be cast. Well, the search is over, and they've cast last year's Mama Morton, Natalie Smith, in the role as Miss Adelaide. Congratulations, Natalie. Away from the island, someone who's recently come back onto my radar is Lucy Penrose. Some of you may remember her as Lucy Sutton. Originally from Stoke-on-Trent, but grew up on the Isle of Man, performing in a few pantos with Dreamstar and possibly a few shows with Manx Ops, before going to Mount View Academy of Theatre Arts, where she obtained a first-class honours degree in acting. Lucy is currently appearing in the Secret Cinema's immersive production of Grease at Battersea Park in London, and playing the part of Rizzo. Lucy is also the co-founder of The Room Where It Happens, on Greek Street in Soho, which is a musical theatre bar with sing-alongs, performances and singing servers. I think I'll be booking in for a bottomless brunch the next time I'm in London. The immersive production of Grease runs at Battersea Park until the 7th of September. This episode has been made possible by funding from the Isle of Man Arts Council. For full details of the funding available and the application deadlines, check out their website at iomarts.com. That's it for now, but make sure you keep up to date with what's going on between episodes by following Manx Theatre Podcast on both Facebook and Instagram.
You're listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast.
Joining me now on the podcast is Thomas Ian Dixon, Megan Hills, Rachel Martin and Charlie Williams from Parados Theatre Company ahead of their production of the brand new play In Their Blood by Ori Wilson, which opens at the King's Court Theatre this Thursday, the 14th of August. Everybody, welcome along to the podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Charlie.
Yep.
This is it then. This is the one where you become...
This is the end.
Yeah, this is your final appearance because you've become joint first with Lisa.
Yes.
And I guess that means you can now retire, yeah?
No, I've got to be fully first. I'm finished on
push Lisa into second place.
Yeah. Lisa, if you're listening, like, we love you, you're great. Yes, joint first now.
Brilliant. So, this is In Their Blood. This is a brand new play written by Ori Wilson, who also is playing the lead role as well.
He is indeed.
Now, normally, I would sort of get to this point of the podcast and I would say to people, for those people who don't know the play, can you give us an idea? But obviously, because this is a brand new piece of work and only you, the cast, and thankfully myself now today, having watched your run through, it's been brilliant. We are the only people who know the story. So tell us the story. Paint the picture.
Don't point at me.
Well, it's, as you say, it's a brand new play written by Ori Wilson. And part of the something that we've said previously on podcasts and in when we've been promoting previous shows that Paradox has done is we really want to start promoting local talent, you know, local writing. We know there's people out there who've put things together and you know, want to have the opportunity to do it. And for some of them, the difficulty is having a production vehicle to do that through. And so this is kind of our way of trying to facilitate that, some of which we've done through the Easter Festival before, and that's a great vehicle, I think, that Mad for Run for new talent to come through. But also separately, when time allows, we've wanted to do it, you know, here and for Ori, we kind of had this plan with him. We said, yeah, we wanted to do it, and it's great. And of course, Megan, who is also on the podcast with us, it's you know, we've got new directors coming through as well, and it's great to see that there's such a vast array of talent on both sides of the fence, acting and writing and producing, coming through. But the story is a proper Manx story.
Very Manx.
About a group of, effectively a group of miners in Laxey. I think it's set in the 1830s. And yeah, it's basically a tale of betrayal, love. There's a little bit of death in there.
Yeah.
And it's a story about Alden, Ori's character, who is effectively trying to break away from the island. He wants to kind of go to America. He wants to seek his fortune. And it's the story about him endeavouring to do that and the very real and relatable obstacles he kind of meets along the way. And I think it's a very, it's kind of a very real play, isn't it?
Mm. It's very sort of slice of life almost. It's not grandiose or enchanted. It's very down to earth, very grounded characters, mm-hmm. Very relatable stories. So it's been a lot of fun to get to grips with, hasn't it?
It's interesting about how you see that the different stories, the different families within the village, and how they all intertwine. Whether it's through
literally in my case,
yes, exactly, yes. Yeah, whether it's through the pub or through the mine, however they know each other and how those stories sort of mix and intertwine. Yeah,
yeah. It has a very sort of small town sort of feeling about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Looking at someone else to say something.
I think that covers everything, doesn't it?
Can you guess who's not been on the podcast before?
So, Rachel, tell us about your character then.
So, I play Mona, who is Alden's mum, mm-hmm. and it's quite a complex character, really. I would say it's one of the toughest roles I've done because she goes through a range of emotions mm-hmm. throughout them. She's a tough mum, you know, she loves her family dearly, she loves her husband, loves her son, works hard to keep the family going, the house going, all that sort of thing, you know, but she's got quite a soft side to her as well, you know, she goes through all these different emotions with her son and with her husband. So yeah, she's a great character and she's quite, you know, central to the story because it's revolving around her family. So she's great.
And of course, obviously with it being said in Laxey, some good Manx accents have to be involved.
Good is a generous term.
I mean, there's a few things you're going. Ori's clearly throwing them in a bit of a just to remind everyone where this is set. It's like, you know, there's a few Manx phrases and Manx language thrown in there, of course, as it would be at the time,
and also, Bonag, of course,
Bonag, yeah, and I think that the. You know, it's little things like, there's a duel at one stage without any spoilers, and they go, oh, it's going to be at King Ori's grave, and you know, you're going, oh, I know where that is, and it's really good because it's not overdone, it's not some sort of hammy, you know, just saying it for the sake of it. It's clearly, you know, it's a clearly thought out story that he's had, and it's really nice in a way to have that, you know, because other than say going to the Manx Museum or that, you don't see a lot of productions done that are focusing on the island and, you know, doing things about the island. And I think it's nice to have that.
Yeah, it's very steeped in Manx culture, isn't it?
Mm. And it's really thought about. And you know, I think it's a love letter to the Isle of Man as much as it is, you know, a story. It, you know, makes you kind of realise the complexity of history and also to kind of think about the personal and very real circumstances that would have been happening at a time that you now just look back at and go, oh, yes, that was the, you know, the Victorian era or the 1830s, and go, actually, no, of course, there are very relatable stories from then, even though this is entirely fiction, that probably were occurring that we can relate to now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so a lot of the stories that are encompassed in the play were true to the 1830s.
Yeah.
So in the play, you have the mine flooding in 1833, and that is something that did happen in Laxey, so he's just very real to the time.
Yeah. Yes, they bring all the guys in to help sort of pump out the mine, don't they?
Yes. But we don't sing "The Laxey Wheel Keeps Turning, Turning." You know, no one breaks into Lady Isabella, which someone did make a suggestion of at some point.
Maybe that's how you finish it.
Yes. We'll
come back on stage holding hands and
that's the bows. We sing Lady Isabella.
Yeah.
Sing
Lady Isabella. Yeah.
I would say all the characters as well have got solid Manx names.
Yes. Yeah. Let's have a look at the cast list then, because whilst we mentioned that, so we've got Alden Callow, that's been played by Ori, who is obviously the writer as well. So that must be interesting being the writer on stage and performing as well.
It's interesting thing for us because obviously it's to date we've done a lot of Shakespeare and he is very much not alive, and so we don't really need to refer to him to ask what does he think about what we're doing with it or what his views are on directorial decisions. So and that's actually been really nice, you know, to have Ori there and to kind of for him to realize the process of actually producing a show, because you write something down. I think everybody probably who's done acting at some point has kind of gone, oh, you know, if I wrote a thing or, you know, and it's very few of us who actually then go on to put that pen to paper and do it. But I do think there is still that part of understanding you know, what's feasibly possible, what in your head sounded good, and actually when it's read out loud, people go, look, I think this should be changed.
Yeah.
And also for him to be able to be firm in his views on what he wanted to stay in. You know, there were things that we had conversations about and gone, do you really want this here? What are you thinking about that? This might not work. And he's gone, no, for the purpose of the story.
Yeah.
And you know, we very much respected that. So for us as a production team, And with David Dawson directing and Megan co-directing with David and myself and Alex, obviously, from the production side, it's been a really interesting journey to work with Ori and to have those conversations, to mould what was his vision in his script into an actual, you know, fully fleshed out play.
So has it been quite a collaborative process then, Megan?
Yeah, it's been great because stuff that we're unsure about and how, you know, it should look in the play, because it's the first time it's been done.
Yeah.
We can get his input and be like, how did you want it to look? How did you get this vision in your head? And seeing his reaction for his play coming to life has just been great.
Yeah. Brilliant. So the cast, we've said that we've got Ori as Alden, and Rachel, you're playing Mona, his mother. Yep. And his father, Kian Callow. Is by Thomas Ian Dixon.
Yes, that is me. It's a lot less stronger than Mona.
tell us about Kian, because he's got a bit of an interesting storyline himself, doesn't he?
I'd say Kian in many ways is quite the opposite to Mona. Mona is strong and dependable and reliable. Kian is very much not. Kian is weak-willed and...
easily swayed?
Very much so, yes. By his own selfishness more than anything else. I think he thinks in his own head he's a strong and sort of dependable person, but he's absolutely not. You see evidence of that more and more as you go through the play. He's a man driven by his own selfish desires more than anything else. Not that he'd ever admit it, not that he would even see it in himself. There's always an excuse, isn't there? There's always a reason. There's always, you know, it's not my fault that this happened or that happened. It's because of this, it's because of that. And there's a plane going by.
And that's one of the joys of being at King's Court Theatre.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Live from Birmingham Airport. It's the...
But no, it's been fun to play because it is always fun to play someone who is so flawed and in many ways ignorant of their flaws. It makes them a challenge to play. And it's been fun to bounce off Rachel with that. We've had some fun sort of throwing a few different ideas around, haven't we? And
I think when you do characters for the first time, you know, usually when you do a play or musical any time, you can look how the character's meant to
be. You've got a reference, haven't you? Yeah, how it's been done before.
TV or read about. So this is the first time we're bringing it for everyone, is doing it for the first time, bringing these characters what exactly thing. But yeah, we go through quite a roller coaster, I think, don't we? It's probably the...
I think you have more ups and downs. I think Kian starts quiet and then just goes down and down. You keep expecting some kind of redemption for him. It just gets worse. Not a good man.
You talk there about passion and weakness, and one of those is Mary.
Yes.
The widow.
Mary.
Who was also Kian's lover.
Yes.
And she's played by Helen Ferner.
Indeed. And I think this is Helen's first play. She's only done two, and she's great. She's really good. You wouldn't get that impression. Yeah. You know, she keeps saying, she's like, oh, I'm not used to this. You know, it's my first play. And then she just goes out and like nails it. Yeah. And you're going, all right, okay, great.
Absolutely on the ball from
But Helen's brilliant. And it's and what's really nice about the whole play and the way Ori's writing is there's no defined heroes and villains really in the whole piece. There are moments where you go, oh, that's the bad guy. And then you kind of go, actually, he's not that bad, or they're not that bad, or she's great, or she's actually not that good. And it's basically just real people.
Yeah.
And that's when you read, you know, you're reading into it.
I mean, there's the good and the bad in everyone. I mean, you look through Alden's story, and you know, he's like, oh no.
Yeah.
It's like, he's hard to like at times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he is. Yeah. He is very,
very arrogant.
Yeah.
But you kind of do feel for him because, I mean, he's only a kid at the end of the day. He's a young man who has dreams
and his passions and his aim for America, and then suddenly sideswiped. And
it's definitely a play built on perspective, and you can understand everyone's point of view in it, which makes it such a difficult play to portray as well.
Yeah,
you have to have that realism in it.
Talking of that sideswipe, Brisha Quayle, his girlfriend, is played by Saoirse Coyle Carroll, and Can we say what that sideswipe is? Or is that ruining the...
No, I think we possibly can. I mean, it's pretty early on that there's kind of an...
It's probably been on Facebook by now.
Yeah, probably. if you look deep in the posts.
Yeah.
First of all, Saoirse does a brilliant job as she always does. She was in Macbeth with us, and that was our first time working with her, and she was one of the witches, and she was fantastic.
She was fabulous, yeah.
But in this, yeah, playing a bit more of a less insane and ethereal character, a very real person. But yeah, she is Alden's lover and girlfriend, who I think thinks that he thinks more of her than he really does.
I think she thinks that she's his girlfriend.
Yes.
I'm not sure he thinks the same thing.
Yes. Which again is another, as Neil pointed out, way in which you can like and not like.
Yes. Yeah.
One definitely is more invested in that relationship than the other one is.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Brownlow. Who's the mine overseer and a moral authority figure.
He is.
So that's played by Daniel Carroll Corley.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
He is. No, he's brilliant, as always. It was a joy to play against him in Macbeth as he played Macduff.
He was,
And he's almost a rival in this one for me as well.
He's your foil in everything now, isn't he?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Or this time I deserve it.
Is it the foil or is he the convenient way out?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think Ian would like the fact that, his wife, as much as he may not have dedication, I don't think he'd like the fact that someone else might be interested. Yeah. I don't think he's got the perspective to be big enough about that on his CV. I think there's definitely some suspicion from him at some points in the play where you can see there's a bit of a connection between his wife and Mrs. Brownlow, and Mr. Brownlow, sorry.
Yes.
Soon to be Mrs. Brownlow, I'm sure.
I think Mona's probably quite oblivious to it for the most part, anyway.
Yes, I think she is meant to be totally oblivious to it because she's, obviously the time it's set and everything, she's just totally 100% invested in her marriage and it's all about being married. And obviously the idea of divorce back in those days would have been highly irregular, I would have thought. And
I think you showed me that there was only between, 1700 and 18 something, there was like 314 divorces in time.
And they had to apply to Parliament.
Yeah. Right. Mm.
So, obviously people with a lot of money could be able to afford to do that, which is obviously why he says you couldn't afford to do.
And 100 of those were members of the royal family.
And none were me.
Yes. Okay, Dr. Quayle, who was Brisia's father, he is the, I guess he's an ex-military doctor.
Yes.
And that's played by Edmund Jeffers.
Yes, Edmund Jeffers, who is fabulous. He's not acted in many, many, many years. And David Dawson, our director, sort of suggested him, and we were like, oh, great. And he's come in and he's been great, hasn't he? I think he's been
absolutely fantastic.
Exudes a real authority in the role and what the doctor needs to be. And I think for, Megan, who's done a large amount of the direction when David's been unavailable, I think it's nice to have someone to be able to come in and take that.
Yeah, he's done quite a good job at it, actually, because he came in quite late to our rehearsal process and straight away he's been on it. He knows what he's doing. He's got his lines down. It's been quite a pleasure, actually, to have him do it.
Great. Then we have Juan, or should I say Juan.
Juan.
Because normally, like when we did Evita, we were talking about Juan Perón, jokingly about Juan. But now this time it is actually Juan.
Yes.
So he's a miner and a bit of an antagonist, isn't he? He is,
yeah.
Makes you like Alan again.
I think he's just, it's this interesting, because there's bits of him, though, you kind of see where he's coming from. There's some scenes you watch and you go, it was the wrong way to go about that, but I do understand the motive behind what you're thinking here. And I think that's what a lot of this play is about, both from Dewin and Alden and, a number of the characters. You're kind of going, I see where you're coming from. I think you've approached this slightly, askew.
Yeah, and he's got designs on Brisia as well.
Yes, he has. So it's always written a very complex web of interrelationships here, where you've got, two people who are together, one of them likes somebody else, someone else likes the one of them who's together, then someone else likes them, and it's very clear as the play goes on who's who. But if you wrote it down on paper and did lines between them, I think it would be like...
Picturing one of those murder boards, bits of red string all over the place. Like everyone's connected to everyone.
A conspiracy theory board. But no, and Gonzo, who plays Dewin, is great. He was great as one of our murderers in Macbeth and brought kind of this real menace in the role. And we've actually had to kind of say to him, we're like, that's really good. Just dial that back slightly in this one. But he's brilliant. And he's, done a number of things now. And we're really enjoying his take on of the role.
Yeah, he brings a definite intensity, doesn't he? It's just yeah, it's very enjoyable to watch it.
Yeah. Christian, who is another one of the miners, that's played by Uomo Holden, and he's another returnee from Macbeth.
Yes, if you I think you said it when you started, you went, and they were in Macbeth, and they were in Macbeth.
Yes.
They were in Macbeth. And it's like, well, you know, but Uomo is great. He was Donald Bain in Macbeth, my younger brother. I played Malcolm. And yeah, again, he's great. I mean, there's a few kind of minor tertiary characters in this that Ori's written in that are kind of there in a few scenes, but they're really essential to kind of fill out this world.
Yeah.
And, you know, Womo's role as Christian, I think, is really good.
Also, then we have Magnus, the innkeeper.
Oh, yeah.
Is it the mines? Is that where we're going to go with the mines tag?
I don't know. Yeah, we haven't come up with a name yet. Have we come up with a name?
I don't think we have, no.
Yeah, we'll have to come up with a name.
Yeah.
Scrawl it in crayon with the left hand above the door.
It's 1833. It's old Laxey around the mines, so it's got to be the mines.
It must be
the mines, isn't it?
It's not going to be, you know, yeah. Dr. McMagnus's Emporium of Magical Drinks, you know. Yeah. But the Unicorn Pink Pony Club, that's what he's going to call it.
I was thinking that the Queen's is a bit far out, really.
I think probably.
The mines.
Yeah.
Old Laxey.
Yeah. Even now with cars, you find the Queen's a bit far out between the two. Yeah, I'll stick it.
He's another returner as well from Macbeth.
He is another returner, the other murderer. Yeah. Sean's great. And I think he wins so far as most Manx accent success.
I had Sean record my lines in his Manx accent on my phone.
Yes.
So I could try and listen to them because it's so good.
Yeah, he's good.
Well, Helen as well, who plays Mary, she's also amazing at doing a Manx accent. She did exactly the same on my phone. She did a few of my lines for me, so I could get a little bit so I didn't sound too Yorkshire.
Yeah. That's Sean Reaney, by the way, because I realised we haven't said his full name.
Oh, right, yes. It's Sean Reaney, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did Panto for David Artis 25 years ago, something like that, and it was Robinson Crusoe, and I was Man Friday, and Dot Tilbury was Robinson Crusoe. Oh, wow. And the gag of it was that Dot taught me to speak English during the interval, so the second half I was the Manxest Man Friday you've ever come across. But with being Manx myself, it was so hard because every part of my being is like, don't be Manx on stage.
Yes.
To then be overly Manx was really hard work.
Yeah. No, I don't think I could do a Manx accent. I have to go.
Accent.
I've tried.
Were you trying
times.
Today?
Was I? Yes. In absolute no.
Okay.
For context, I read in for a couple of the people who weren't there. I wasn't trying to do the accent, Neil. I would have obviously done a lot more work and preparation were I actually doing that.
I was trying, and yours was better than mine.
There was a clip I saw the other day online, and it was from the Graham Norton show, and it was Jack Whitehall had been in a film, and he was saying, I think this is, it's an old one because it was from lockdown, and Graham Norton was saying to him, oh, and it's amazing, you do an American accent in this film, and Olivia Colman goes, in that clip, and he's like, yes.
Okay. Moving on. Yes, no, it's,
Brilliant. So there's only a few parts left now. So we have the boy, which is a young miner who was injured by an explosion. So this happens early doors. This is played by Thomas McAleer, who is incredibly fresh off stage as Charlie. He's been one of the two Charlies this last week in Charlie at the Chocolate Factory. He's done a fantastic job.
Yeah.
So he comes in and he plays quite a small part in this, yeah?
Yes, yeah. So he's a rising star who's just led a major musical, and we've got him screaming on a table, and then that's it.
And then sitting in a pub later.
And then later sitting in a pub, as, you know, obviously I'm sure he would do on a regular basis, being, what is he, 12? I don't know.
It's Laxey. Things are easy.
It's 1833. But no, again, it's Ori is writing in devices and characters to remind you of the time that you're in. And then this is, you know, it's a mine, it's Laxey in the 1830s, there's a mining accident. Health and safety.
Not
gone mad nowadays. Yeah. But no, he's, so Thomas is going to come in. It's a really critical scene that you need somebody who can actually act, because it's a, you know, he's got to be massively in pain and there's a lot going on. And so, yeah, you know, having a good hand at the tiller in that respect is essential.
Brilliant. Then we have Kaylee, played by Maeve Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Maeve Wilson.
Yeah, Maeve, first Paradox production for Maeve. She is great. Again, a small role in that she's in, I think, one scene in terms of that role. She isn't in another one, I think, is kind of...
In all the pub scenes.
Yeah, she's in all the pub scenes. But again, great. You know, she came, again, started reasonably late with us because she is going to be with Saoirse, and a number of others in the upcoming Mad Fur production of Midsummer Night's Dream.
Right, yes.
And so she's very, very good. You know, she came in and again, you know, Megan gave her direction, said, this is what we want you to do, go. And she just did it, you know, and you're going, that's so helpful, you know, because it's...
And so much character to such a small
scene. Yeah, and the little, those sort of roles are the most dangerous, I always find, when you're doing stuff, because... you're worried the actor's going to kind of go, oh, I've only got a couple of lines, I'll just kind of phone it in.
Yeah.
And it just completely can ruin everything else that's going on, just drag the whole thing down.
Yeah.
And luckily we don't have that. With who we've got, they've actually, you know, brought their A game, and she's very, very good.
And then the final part, member of the cast is the very pivotal but minor part of The Man.
The Man.
Played by Charlie Williams.
Played by Charlie Williams. Yes, my I think it's my first... wordless role. I say nothing at all.
I was going to say Monkey's Paw, but you did it at the end.
No, Monkey's Paw, I had narration through the whole way through.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
I narrated through the... I talked through the whole thing.
That's how little impact you made.
I just talked incessantly. You just zoned me out.
We all try to do.
You just zoned me out. I remember that's what the adjudicator said. I just stopped listening. No, it was...
I do apologise.
So it's a device, though, similar to Monkey's Paw, in that the man who effectively is in a number of the scenes, and I think the audience will sort of work out why he's there as the play goes on. He's a very key dramatic device for Ori to kind of earmark for the audience and show through the play, you know, situations that are arising and who he represents. And I think it's probably an open to interpretation for the audience to what or who he represents.
Mm. And the cast,
yes. And me. So, I think it's an interesting role that I'm going to enjoy just appearing at different points and seeing what you all do.
I mean, hopefully this isn't a spoiler, but I see it a little bit like in Hamilton, there's the Bullet.
The Bullet, yeah. Yeah.
And kind of interacts with each character before a particular thing happens.
And he is a bit like that, and that's kind of, through Ori's writing, I've kind of seen what that is. And you see it in a number of things. In Monkey's Paw, which Ori was in, is an example, except the difference there was we did him in that form as the narrator. They're not really written in, but we added him in and the narrator became this kind of role. But the Bullet's probably the best example more recently in terms of Hamilton, is that, you know, figure who's in all of these key moments and represents a something for that moment. Mm. And I think that's who he is, definitely.
Brilliant. Well, you know, I really enjoyed sitting watching the rehearsal today, and I think it's going to be a fantastic show. So that you've got a few more days left now of just sort of some serious rehearsals, knocking everything together and into shape as we get into here at King's Court Theatre. Okay, so before we go, way, way back in 2020, after the first big lockdown, we created our Spotify playlist, which is our ultimate musical theatre playlist, and every person that's come onto the podcast since then has added a song onto the list. Now, these are songs that are usually something that it's either a song from a show that we've sung, a song that means something important to us, or it could be just our favourite song. So Neil King and I, when we first set up the list, we each put 10 songs in to get the list going, because a playlist with two songs is very short and not very interesting. But like I said, everyone who's come onto the podcast since then has added a song. And let's just have a quick look at the list and see if we can come up with a couple that we can find. Because, no, Ian, you chose one from... Well, actually, you've been on a couple of times, haven't you?
I've chosen two, I think.
Yeah, so you chose Dust and Ashes from Natasha Pierre and the Grand Comet of 1812,
yep.
Which I'd never heard of beforehand.
Of course Ian Dixon chose the most esoteric and random musical no one's ever heard of. What would you like? Oh, I'd like Memories from Cats. What would you like? I would like Dancing with Tiny Dolls from the musical Potatoes on Wheels, which was written in 1833.
It's like you've met me, Charlie.
But you also chose one from Shrek as well, I think.
I did, yes.
Which one was that? Was that, I think I
got
it.
Was Who I'd Be, I think.
Oh, Who I'd Be, yes, yes, that's the one, yes, yes. And Charlie, you've been on a couple of times as well.
I've chosen two. I think mine were From Now On. I went with a movie musical first, which I think is some sort of sacrilegious, isn't it? And then, although it's becoming a real musical, so
yes.
I think, therefore, I will be legitimised. It's like a futures bet that I made on a musical song.
It's finally going to pay off.
And it's going to pay off. And the second one was The American Florence from Chess.
Yes.
Which I chose, which is definitely not a movie musical song. It was a musical first. And that's, I really enjoy that. I have many more, but I'm not going to increase the list, because I think a lot of my others are on the list already.
And Rachel, you chose Defying Gravity.
I did, because last time I was on, which was with David Dawson a few years ago, we'd just been to London. Well, not me and David.
Interesting.
quick context reversed there.
This is how she got the role of Mona.
Yeah, I'd just seen it being done in London, and it was just phenomenal. Just I remember saying it was just, you know, the hairs on the back of my neck sort of stood up on end. It was just so, so amazing, and that's why I chose it when I was on, yeah.
And, of course, we're only about 4 months away from Wicked, the movie part two.
Oh, yes. Gosh, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Interesting to see the second half, because I've never seen the show.
I've never seen the show either.
I haven't.
No.
It is wonderful. You need to
the film's
go see
very
if you
long.
Get a chance.
Yes, the film was very long, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it more than I wanted to.
So all that said then, Megan, what is your song and why would you like to add it to the playlist?
The song I'd like to choose is Say My Name from Beetlejuice.
Brilliant.
It's got to be one of my favourite songs to listen to musical-wise, just because you can hear the connection that the characters have with each other in the song, and it's such an intense song as well. It's like quite a pivotal part of the play.
Yeah. And also, I've seen in recent weeks that it's coming to the West End next year. So looking forward to that. I wonder if Alex is going to come with it as well, because he is amazing as Beetlejuice.
Well, let's hope so, because it is it's quite cool.
Okay, right. Well, thank you very much. We'll get that added into the playlist. So In Their Blood runs at the King's Court Theatre from Thursday the 14th to Saturday the 16th of August, with performances nightly at 7:30. So it's just the three.
Yep.
If you've not done so already, you can get your tickets from ticketsource.co.uk/King Williams College. Ian, Megan, Rachel, Charlie, thanks for taking the time out of your busy rehearsals to chat to me today. And we wish you and all the very best for your run of In the Blood this week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast with Neil Callan.
Just a reminder there that tickets for In Their Blood are available from ticketsource.co.uk/King Williams College. Tickets are £18 for adults and £15 for students and over 65s, and subject to a booking fee. Right, let's have a quick look forward at what's left to come this year. This week, Paradox Theatre Company bring In Their Blood to King's Court Theatre from Thursday the 14th to Saturday the 16th of August. A screening of Six, the musical, is being shown at the Broadway Cinema on Monday the 25th of August at 7:30pm. Tickets available at villagaiety.com. Madford's production of A Midsummer Night's Dream will be performed in the grounds of Government House on the 5th, 6th and 7th of September. Tickets are also available from Ticket Source by following a link on Madford's website, which is madford.im. That's madf.im. One for the kids now. On the 13th of September at the Gaiety Theatre, The Dinosaur That Pooped a Rock Show will be making an appearance. This is a show based on the books by Tom Fletcher and Dougie Pointer from McFly, who also provide the music. There are two shows at 11:30am and 3pm. Tickets available from villagaiety.com. Then, from the 10th to the 18th of October, Centre Stage Productions are bringing the band to the stage at the Gaiety, and tickets are on sale now. On the 23rd of October, the American Drama Group present TNT Theatre in George Orwell's 1984 at the Gaiety Theatre. Next up, the Service Players, who will be presenting Henrik Ibsen's A Doll's House, directed by Daniel Sebastian Gray, at the Balakameen Studio Theatre from the 20th to the 22nd of November. Well, with that, we bring episode 71 to a close. Thanks once again to Charlie, Ian, Rachel and Megan for joining me on the podcast, and we wish them and everyone involved with Paradox Theatre Company's production of In Their Blood all the very best for opening night and their run this week. Don't forget to check out our Spotify playlist by searching for Manx Theatre Podcast, and that's all one word. There are almost 120 tracks on there now, and over 8 hours of show tunes to satisfy your musical theatre needs. If you have any events that you'd like me to talk about or promote on a future episode, you can contact me through the podcast social media accounts or by email to manxtheatrepodcast@gmail.com. All that remains is to say thanks for listening, and I hope you join me again next time. I've been Neil Callan, and you've been listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast. Goodbye.
The Manx Theatre Podcast, taking a look behind the scenes of Manx Theatre.
Caviar, men actors alive for me.